our internal arrangement. We were supposed to have this meeting somewhere that side, not here. It's very far from here. We arranged this meeting knowing that when the bell rings for voting, we must go inside. But let's leave it now. Let's just try to come back where we were. The questions were raised. You were starting to respond. But after yourself, I would like also National Treasury to make that a very short comment. If possible, Dr. Kumala would just like us to be, because of this discussion, to be as short as possible so that we Salga can have a chance as well to present. Thank you.
No, thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me respond to the questions in the order in which they were asked. So I'll start with the Honorable Ramaphosa's questions. The first question that has been posed here is whether in our concern with the consultation process we are looking for a situation where there could be like court determination of some of these things, and if so, what do we think would be the situation if there's an undesirable outcome? Now, I think the long and short of my answer is that we are actually not in any way intending to do what departments must do. We would like to protect the integrity of the system. And so we would like to be able to provide the recommendations that are envisaged in Section 214 around this determination of these grants and transfers. That's all that we're interested in. And it's in that context that the concern arises, because we've seen quite a significant number of changes happening that the Commission has not been consulted, not just about consulting the Commission, but it's consideration of the Commission's recommendations before you can actually enact the bill. So it's important that we put it in that context. Now, your second question is a question that I can't actually answer in a very direct way, but I can say that this issue of shifting of grants or changing them from the one to the other because there's a perceived lack of capacity here, and then so a national, these are concurrent functions in most cases. And so I think the first responsibility for capacity also lies at the national level. And so it's quite strange that we have actually entrenched this whole concept of lack of capacity when the Constitution enjoins these departments to basically build that capacity in municipalities where it does not exist. So the question is like, do you take away and do the business yourself, or must you build capacity? And I think the answer is probably you shouldn't actually be doing that, because you're actually undermining the process when you're doing that. So that would be my answer to that. Honorable Swart.
Sorry, I think it's a very important question, this one. But I just, Honorable Ramaphosa, I just want to further understand. I'm not saying that from what I'm going to say, I'm taking any side, but just for my own clarity. Now, in doing that, National Treasury says, in order to do that, they can only do that by legislation. Section 154 of the Constitution, where's my Constitution? No, it's here. I think Section 154 of the Constitution, which is much, much clearer than others, says the national government and provincial government by legislation and other measures. So blah blah blah. Now, if then National Federal Government is saying, let's have part of this grant divided into direct and indirect so that we can intervene. I don't know if Mr. Khumalo, is it not what you call it, the same thing that you are saying? That is one. But the second thing that we raised in 1 year, I'm sure you, if you would recall, we were saying in the other divisions of revenue, there used to be a clause which was very specific. It was very specific, which was saying that the department or the entity that is being allocated that grant must take not more than 4% of that to build capacity. And then you remember we had a long argument with the National Treasury because as a committee we wanted to have to continue to have that explicit so that people will not be judged because they have used this money to build capacity to be clear. Now, I'm saying so, what is it that you exactly, what is your view on that? In other words, now that clause is not there, now the department are saying, let this grant not be a direct but indirect, so that to ensure that there is spending. This isn't the issue, our aim. It is not to ensure that there is spending while capacity is being built as well. I'm just asking a kind of a hypothetical question. I'm not saying that we are agreeing with that. We're still going to come to national challenge. You want to add the comment, Master?
Okay, Chairperson, I think the one point about where we stand on that particular clause that you're making reference to, you would recall that that was a recommendation of the Commission for it to be there. Now, when it was removed, again, it's one of those things that happened because departments have had these consultations and they've discussed and we come in at the tail end of the process. Now, capacity building in those conditional grants, and as far as the Commission is concerned, is supposed to be part of the grant design. So you can't separate those two and say, no, I will do the business, but you, I will give you this money to build capacity whilst I do the business for you. There has to be some integration because at some point there's an exit. You have to exit at some point. So that exit strategy cannot be delayed from what the municipality that receives that grant or that grant in kind is basically doing as part of its normal day-to-day business. So I don't disagree with you. I actually agree with you. I think we need to rethink these types of issues because the at the center of all of this, the challenges that we're raising are really about the way the grants are designed, especially when you start doing these indirect grants. The experience, the most recent experience was with that Arahik grant, which was quite a disaster. The first 2-3 years of it was just terrible. But that's a national department that has the responsibility. Yes, I'm just saying that was a disaster. So what do we learn out of that? We need to learn something because if we see ourselves moving more and more in that direction, but we can see that there are things that are not happening yet, what are we learning from that? That's the challenge that is facing us. Now, to take care of your time, Chair, if you allow me, can I move on?
Thank you, Chair. I think I must make this point that as National Treasurer, we are not the proponents of indirect grants. Neither are we proponents of fragmenting of the grant system. I think that should actually be very clear because some of these responses. Yes, we are unfortunately become messengers, but the truth is we are not. If there was to be anything that actually kept them, it's something that, you know, we would support. But the challenge is these decisions are done by executives responding to the urgent problems of delivery. I mean, the budget eradication program is a typical example. I mean, it's not like the grant that somebody set for 2 years to think about. It is something that just was thought about as a mechanism of how the executive can respond to this urgent and problem of delivery failure in the system. And I think now, I mean, when you look at RBIC also, is it RHIC? I mean, we got it to be a direct grant, precisely because we thought maybe that is a better way of looking at it so that it can begin to implement. But, you know, we had to then look at maybe let's have it as a direct and indirect grant so that, and I think the advantage of looking at it as direct and indirect grant is that you are able to actually have a differentiated approach wherever you are saying where municipality is performing, let it continue to deliver. But where a municipality is failing, let other mechanisms that are driven by national government be used. So where I think government hasn't found itself a rhythm is how do you then in the process still stay on course in building the capacity? I think we've seen it with regard to the provinces, for instance, in the health and education grants. So when departments take over the grants, because a lot of the time they also don't know that actually you need to have planning, you need to have all this. So now when they take over the grant, the first 2 years is crisis management. So they don't actually have even time to oversee the implementation of capacity building intervention. And I think with municipalities, that's the same thing. So I think where we need to find our rhythm in using this mechanism is to be able to say, how do you then, while you are as a stopgap measure to make sure that the communities are not suffering in terms of capacity, how do you make sure that as a department you still find your rhythm in terms of capacity building? So what we are doing with the national departments, at least with regard to provinces, with the infrastructure development improvement program, we have been having a systematic, a much more programmatic way of building a capacity. So now we have said to them, you need to look at your capacity in two ways. You need to look at your capacity for oversight and support at the provincial level to make sure that they actually continue to be on course to building their capacity, because even the issues of how you operate and maintain this asset that we are creating becomes an issue. Then look at also your other stream of capacity of how you are driving this implementation, direct implementation, you know, on the ground. And maybe eventually what will happen, for instance, in education, we are saying that after the 3 years, I think, the grant will be placed back into the provinces, and the department will remain with some strong oversight capacity. But you must remember, one of the major failures in our concurrent functions is that departments have not always had a very strong IGR function that actually helps them, one, to oversee and understand the performance of the function, and two, to be able to respond when there is a problem. So now, I believe that after that, the department will be in a position then to have a capacity to actually oversee, but also to be able to respond where there is a failure, without actually taking over everything from all other provinces that are performing. So I think for me, this, even with the municipalities, we need to look at
it. In the interest of time, let's say you have time. But maybe without, incidentally, you didn't hear the other question, and I have a question you raised, and so that's why you're looking at with interest. It's because Honorable Ramathana, part of the question he raised was that we worried about the capacity at provincial and national. Whilst ourselves at national level, he mentioned the ASIDI program, which is implemented by national, not being what we call a spend. But I want to remind Honorable Ramathana that I thought that we would not raise this question, would not come, because if you remember, in our recommendations for the appropriation last year, I don't know whether it's last year or other, we raised this question. I mean, the question now that planning must be done is because of our engagement as well on this question of planning. including this one, to this committee's engagement, that this planning. You know, I don't need to remind you how AFCD came about. But now we have not been able to find it at the right time. But I'm not sure if in other words, but the number of the time kind of question was saying this capacity must not only look at the problem. We must look at national level. Do we have capacity planning and all those things properly? So that the appointment of our revenue, they seem to be saying, no, with us, it's only door. Mm-hmm. Only next door, that is a problem. You know, when we have our own, what you call it, problems. What I wanted to say to Honorable Ramachalana is that, Honorable Ramachalana, with your permission, you know, that question, again, would still, it's still relevant, but I thought that you would, if one day we happen to come back to deal with appropriation, still find out, because I know that in the new appropriation there's a clause now that is about planning, I think from last year's appropriation at the national level, talking about these things of planning. But whether we see it, I like him when he says that. So it's a challenge, I don't want us to engage in that question. I'm not sure if we'll get a satisfactory answer. I don't know if you can comment on a problem.
No, Chair, I respect that view. I think we should proceed that. In the response from Treasury, it invites lots of engagement. We need to have a conversation about that perspective.
Yeah.
Because that perspective avoids to deal with the cost and shift into what is easily symptoms, that without dealing directly with the cost of the problem. Because the cost of the problem is a capacity. You've got to address that particular problem in order for that to be addressed. Pulling off the responsibility does not necessarily assist in building capacity. So there is something that we need to have a conversation with that, but I just wanted to leave it at that stage. Because even when at the time of pulling, you actually create more problems for continuity and maintenance of that particular asset going forward, because you need nothing as far as in terms of the capacity is concerned. So I think I would like to agree with you that let's proceed, but there is a lot of discussion and we don't want to shoot the messenger, because you did say there's a messenger. But but the point is that the Treasury in releasing, there should be a critical template that begins to say, we can't do this because of that, because at the end of the day, they hold the pace. They got the final say in terms of the money. So let me leave it at that. I know that it encourages the super minister to get the debate, but I leave it there.
Understanding that I wanted to hear the comments on, and I think the chairperson has also commented on that. In this past year, we've been asking for the inclusion of that section of the capacity building. It must not be assumed. You know?
Defeated. Because we even inserted in one of our recommendations. I thought that we were overruling the department in that particular aspect. And reality, that recommendation of inserting that and making sure that it actually happened did not see the light of day. As a result, we back there. Otherwise, they did listen, they did hear it, but actually not done anything about it. So I think we were defeated in a way. Maybe the next parliament would have a little bit more teeth to bite in terms of that particular aspect. At the moment, it looks like a very blunt. They are not able to bite, so I will leave it at that.
Now, the dentist took out all the teeth. I hope that those people will be really interested.
We're actually asking quite very important questions. Maybe to explain that the influence grant framework, they ask for provision for capacity building. But keep in mind, for example, when it's a provincial grant, some of the provincial conditional grants with so much percentage may be used by the province. Capacity building. So, for example, for them to administer their grant, they must can use X percent of that amount to actually ensure capacity building. We can look at them, but some of the conditional grants do have it in, some of the education infrastructure grants, for example, do have it in.
To help us find it.
Yes.
Because, you know, if the department were to, let's say, Western Cape, Housing will not take you to court. If Western Cape takes you to court, it will be based on the law that has been passed. Not on anything else, on the law. The judge will say, what does the law say? Now, you can't say, in the back room, we do have this arrangement, so it will not work. But that's why I was to say we want it included here. And I think Honorable Mashagana, we do want it included. I don't think that. I think we have ourselves to blame for what you are saying. So you're right, but I think we are to blame ourselves. It should not be what you call it like that. I don't want you, Vakumalo, to respond to this conversation. I want you to go to the next response you are getting to.
Okay. I'm moving on to Honorable Swart's question on the local government functional framework and who is supposed to be doing it. Simple. I have a letter that I received in 2010 that invited me, that was from the Department of Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs and the National Treasury. Jointly, they were embarking on a review of the local government functional framework, which is partly why when we conducted our local government fiscal framework review, we excluded the funding for district municipalities. It was simply because there was not yet on this. Now, I think it's important for this issue around the uncertainty to be brought into the fore, because what happens is that there are certain instances that we have experienced where district municipalities have actually been in financial distress and they have written to the commission. We have looked at what it is that they are doing that has actually put them in those financial dire straits, and we find that functions have been moved to them, or they have been moved away from them when the people stay, but the function has been moved. So these are decisions that are taken by MECs assigning functions within that space. Now, in terms of the Systems Act, again, it does require that the recommendations of the Commission be sought when those executive decisions that have to do with shifting of functions are taken. Again, the Commission is not consulted. I've been working for the Financial and Fiscal Commission for 14 years. I have never, in that period, received anything that has to do with an MEC assigning a function to one municipality or another that has come to the Commission in terms of the Systems Act for a processing. So these are things that happen. They do result in serious financial implications for the affected spheres, and unfortunately we couldn't do anything because of that a gap that is there with respect to that. Honorable Mashiko, the issues around the agriculture grants, may I just take a very general look at them. The point that is there is that these grants have been underperforming for a very long time. I must say that as a commission, we have been raising issues around this since around about 2005, 2006. the need to actually restructure them and make them more useful and responsive to the needs. We have had at some point when the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform was set up, we have engaged with that department to check whether some of the grants that are sitting with the Department of Agriculture and Forestry and Fisheries are not actually supposed to have been sitting with the Department of Rural Development. The process basically just fizzled out, but I'm glad to say that towards the end of last year, the Commission was invited to come and participate in a discussion with the Department. I think it was a joint meeting of the Department and the National Treasury around these grants, and I'm told that there is a technical team that has been established to look at this particular grant. So hopefully the challenges that are there that have resulted in the reduction in these grants in terms of the budget going forward would actually be addressed in that dimension. So Honorable Bashifo's observations are actually the same as ours. Unfortunately, I don't have any better answer than what I've given. The issue of which is the second question, is around the equitable share and employment practices. I've paraphrased it, and employment practices in municipalities. I think there is a process that is currently underway that the Commission is also part of, which is around the regulation relating to the Municipal Systems Amendments Act, and that has to deal with responsibilities and organograms in the municipalities in local government, including remuneration issues and who basically takes responsibility for what. I think the outcome of that process, we were looking at the final set of documents last week, but they told me that these are still confidential, so I can't actually tell you. But I think the concern that is raised through Honorable Mashiko's question basically is part of the challenge that process basically is trying to resolve by clearly assigning accountability and oversight roles of tightening oversight roles of council in terms of these processes. Finally, your question, Honorable Sogon, I'm going to refer to Mr. Agave, that relates to the BE, the BEP, and the planning. Well, yeah, he looks like a BE in his jacket. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's just to clarify, at the EEP, EEWP, yeah, basically is a 10-year plan that the municipality must now submit a council-approved plan that must submit to Treasury, indicating how they're going to align all their infrastructure conditional grants and how they're going to spend them in an integrated manner. So for the Commission, the issue is just that to make sure that when you introduce all. In the deal,
In the budget review, where do you find?
The division of revenue.
In the division of revenue.
Yes.
Honourable members, I know that Honourable Matlana was saying the more we get responses, the more sometimes you think that they raise some questions, you know, for further engagement. However, the time doesn't allow us to see each to one. I thought that at least we would be finished by 12:30. But what I would like to ask FFC for now would to it later as well. It's sad to say, I'm not even sure, Chairperson, that you answered all the questions, but if, when we check, we find that there are questions that were answered, unanswered, please feel free to return them in writing. And that applies to National Treasury. I think the main questions you wanted to respond to, you have responded. Am I right? The others, then you can, so if you wish, just put them in writing. Honorable Councillor Tilley. As they are setting up, please, the Parliamentary Budget Office find I must I'm sure we'll get your comments when? By Friday. This is normally our main, what you call a presentation from the FSC, and then we'll go to the department. But no, it's fine. Honorable colleagues is already over to you. I would like to be. No, but your presentation is not long.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Chairperson. Thank you for the opportunity to allow Saga to share its sentiments about the 2014 Division of Revenue Bill. Chair, let me just also indicate I'm joined by a team from the Saga office, both the head office as well as our parliamentary support team. I'm sure it'll be at the back there.
Okay.
I'm just making the point so that when the difficult questions come, you know where to look. Well, Chairperson, let me kick off. Firstly, I think Saga joins many others to welcome the overall sentiment of the budget given the current economic pressures. We also acknowledge that the budget supports the NDP's vision of building a capable state that at the local government level through various capacity building programs that also support rural municipalities, and this is evident in the alignment of the 2014 budget to the NDP to NDP priority areas and particularly the job creation. And then of course acknowledging that the budget encourages economic growth, economic development and growth, job creation, and emphasizes the need to work with business by creating an environment for business effect to be creating these jobs. And the targeted focus on infrastructural expenditure will have a positive effect on growing the economy and as a consequence therefore creating employment opportunities. And the call for the control of government expenditure is welcome, is a welcome development entailing wasteful expenditure. And then, importantly, share the plateauing trend of local government funding is noted. However, some of the challenges that continue to face local government will, in fact, we want to put to the committee call for an upward slope of that trend. I think it's also appropriate to make the point that I think there's the discussion this morning from the FSC's presentation continues to point to the need for a review of our, the totality of our fiscal framework, not simply to deal with them in an ad hoc manner through the appropriations, but I think the point is that we've acknowledged the plateauing of the grant. grants, which is not only for local government, I think the acknowledgement is cutting right through. The impact of the new local government act with share formula is welcome. It does, it is sensitive to municipalities with a lower revenue raising capacity or potential. And I think we're noting that the allocation now means a 50% increase in allocations, particularly to rural and district municipalities. FOC also welcomes the new human settlement development grant in the order of 10 million rand to the six accredited municipalities. The number of the municipal grants has shifted from to the indirect components, or have had new indirect grant components created over the spending period. An additional 934 million is added to the indirect regional bulk infrastructure grant, and this is welcome. SALGA continues to welcome the incentives introduced for developing more integrated and efficient cities through the integrated development grant in the order of 841 million over the medium term period. I think it's also important to point out that this grant in particular makes two significant acknowledgements. The first is the responsibility that the totality of our system of government has to focus on growing the big cities, because this is where the economy of the country sits. The eight metros accounts for upwards of 70% of economic output. And then the second one is the integrated element. All of the grants are sector specific, and the risk there is that the integrated planning gets lost. So housing focuses on housing, human settlements focusing on water, rather sanitation, provision of sanitation, water focusing on water and the like. So the risk there obviously is undermining integrated planning, and I think what this grant in particular begins to do is to present a much greater focus on not just provisioning of service, but integrated in a manner that's integrated. And additional funding is made available through a subsidy of 293 million aimed at lowering the cost of basic services, and I think there's further work that's going ahead to look at the costing of those services. And then an amount of 36.1 billion will be transferred to municipalities through direct conditional grants, and 7.7 billion will be spent on their behalf through indirect grants. Now, I think the whole discussion about direct indirect grants probably warrants a bit more focused attention. I think, again, our system of government was very deliberate when we characterized it as a developmental state. The NDP talks about a competent state. And I think that is instructive, that it's not enough to simply be avoiding the problem by providing the service, or the national department providing the service directly. And part of the mandate is to build that capacity within local government agencies. And so, and I'm not going into that any further. The increase in indirect grants for 20...
I just want, I wanted this clarity to get from FSC, from that mainly from National Treasury, but you're saying the national government just provides the services, but are you saying that in doing that, in that process, there's no intention to build capacity as well in the process of doing that?
I think it's established now that where there's a direct or an indirect provision of a service through a national department, the developmental agenda gets lost. Developmental specifically referring to the capacity at the local state level. And if that trend continues, I mean, it's not helpful, because I think the FSC also makes the point that the infrastructure is provided, there's no ability to maintain that infrastructure. In many instances, the municipalities just own the infrastructure, and that's not helpful. The point we're making, Chair, is that it might be a necessary intervention at the point to ensure that the service is delivered, but it cannot become a way of doing things firstly, and secondly, even when it's an intervention aimed at addressing a particular problem, it cannot be oblivious to the requirement, obligation, in fact, to build capacity at the local state level. Okay. Then we acknowledge that funds were reduced from municipalities with weak past performance. 460 million shifted from the direct integrated national electrification program grant to an indirect grant. Saga notes an assertion for municipalities who failed to implement certain projects. Funds may be converted into indirect grants for national government to provide infrastructure. And then the challenge in local governments is acknowledged, but again, the point that we're making is the need to develop the capacity at the local government level. Chair, the figures are as indicated, they're taken as an extract directly from the bill. I will not speak to the figures, the table rather. Just to note that the HSDG and USDG spending both exceeds general capital spending in the metros, and furthermore, the USDG performance is improving in 2013-14 and appears to be on a more solid grounding heading into the fourth into its fourth year. Again, the qualitative spending of the grant we seem to be making headway. I think there's a need to interrogate whether it's a qualitative outcome that is resulting from this higher expenditure rate. The HSDG increased by 13% in 2013-14 compared to a small 1% increase on the HSDG. Given the estimated inflation of 6.2 in 2014, this effectively means that the HSDG in real terms is in fact declining. Combined with the recent substantial increase in the housing subsidies approved by MINMEC, this will put considerable pressure on the HSDG and limit the sector's ability to meet targets for delivery of top structures and service types. And on the USDG, the CSAGA will be lobbying the National Department of Housing and putting together proposals to extend to the USDG to not only the metros but a range of larger cities. SAGA also welcomes the willingness of the National Department to make changes to the draft USDG policy to enable municipalities to fund or to use the funds for interventions to install or upgrade services to cater for backyard tenancy. And then SAGA also is working with the National Department of Housing to amend the existing housing subsidy programs to enable the application to backyard interventions, as well as to develop other possible initiatives for municipal support to backyard dwellers. And then just a bit more on the human settlements grant. The new capacity grant, which will provide 300 million rands directly to the six metros that have now been assigned level 3 accreditation, level 3 housing function in 2014. And these funds will obviously cover the operational costs to administer the housing function and programs on behalf of the province. The Department of Housing indicated that the HSDG grants, capital grants, will only flow directly to assigned metros beginning of July 2015, that's next year, which leaves a full year for the metros to utilize the capacity grant to get their house in order, including the approved staff structures, organograms, training of staff, the whole issues around negotiations with the union, due diligence on projects and assets to be transferred as a result of the transfer of the function, and then, of course, the proper identification and management of all of the risks that come with the transfer of function. In order for the measures to be ready to receive the capital grant by the 1st of July next year, 2015, it's vital that the provincial departments move quickly to provide full information on staff assets. Now, this is not a matter for DORA specifically. The point here is that the success of the discharge of the housing function by metros is dependent on the work that gets done between now and 2015. And the bulk of that is really sitting with the provinces where the function is sitting now and their ability to assist the metros to take over the function. In summary, it's extremely important that the risks be managed so that the metros are not set up to fail and to ensure that there is no dip in performance, both in terms of financial and non-financial performance once the functions is handed over to the metros. The RHIC, Rural Household Infrastructure Grant, I think there's been a sense of reflection of this and its non-performance. further welcomes the conversion of the grant to a direct Schedule 5B grant to municipalities in the 2013-14 and to strengthen the capacity and accountability of local governments in terms of the delivery of water and sanitation services to households. Municipalities can better manage community consultation process and choose appropriate technologies. And then the shift to direct grant means that the same peer which installs the infrastructure is then responsible for its ongoing maintenance and functionality into the future. However, difficulties remain in the 13-14 with the rollout despite the conversion to direct grant. In 2013-14, 107 million allocated to direct grant. By the end of quarter one, there was zero expenditure recorded against that grant. Again, that's just a reflection of the expenditure, or non-expenditure, if you like, on the grant. The dual approach to the grant introduced in 2014, the division of revenue per may therefore be appropriate solution to ensure that service delivery while simultaneously strengthening and promoting local government's role in the provision of sanitation services. And then 42% in the order of 48 million rand will flow directly to municipalities upon approval of their business plan, while the remainder is spent directly by the National Department of Housing via service level agreements with the municipalities. And of course, the departments must provide skills transfer as part of the project being implemented. By the outer years, the MSDF, ideally the entire allocation should be disbursed directly to municipalities as a Schedule 5B grant. And then towards the conclusions here, what we're raising here is a number of issues. I think in the questions the FFC gets raised, they don't have a specific direct bearing on the division of revenue per stands now. The point is that these are national legislation or funded or underfunded mandates that have a direct bearing on municipal fiscal arrangements. The first one is the Special Planning and Land Use Management Act. The Act has now been extended to and obviously will come into operation towards in the course of 2014-15 financial year. The implementation will lead to an increase in operational budgets for municipalities because they, amongst other things, are required to establish the planning tribunals, and that requires the appointment of qualified and experienced personnel on these planning tribunals. To give effect to the provisions of the Act, municipalities must, amongst other things, review the spatial development frameworks, the zoning or town planning schemes, and the land use schemes. They would have to review their policies, bylaws, and systems of delegation and ensure that the proper record systems are in place. And then the processing of land use contribution will have a direct cost implication for local government. And this is in as far as it relates to court orders. Just one transgression, a high court application costs something in the order of 80,000. And the extent of land use contribution, of course, is massive. Like the municipal planning tribunal, the appeal tribunals will also have a cost implication as the required staff or required qualified professional staff needs to be appointed on the appeal panels. And then the cost implication will vary depending on the existing capacity, expertise, and system currently in use in each of the municipalities. Then secondly, the regulations on the appointment and conditions of employment of senior managers. Now let's just make the point as we always do when we deal with this matter. The SAUGA as part of its own outcomes for the organization is committed to ensuring the professionalization of the local sphere. So nothing in what we say seeks to undermine the need for professional, competent, and capacitated staff at municipal level. However, the regulations require that the municipality must review its staff structure by the 16th of January 2015, and that the staff structures will include at least the following departments: development and town planning, public works and basic services, community services, finance, corporate services, roads and transport, and this will also have a clear financial implication on municipalities. Capacity assessments to be done for all the municipal managers and Section 56 managers will also have a cost implication for municipalities. And then the Public Administration Management Bill. The bill is currently being considered by Parliament and is scheduled in the NSOP on the 4th of March. It will have financial implications for municipalities, and that is primarily as it relates to the IT systems. And there's no indication of whether costing has been done to date, or if it has indeed been done. Was not shared despite the request to do so from SAGA. The bill provides for compatibility of ITC systems, and the extent to which this has to happen remains unclear. And the point simply is that 278 municipalities plus however many municipal entities all have a multiplicity of municipal financial systems and billing systems, all of which, the integration of all of these will obviously come at a huge financial implication for municipalities if they have to be replaced or fully integrated. Then, I don't think a presentation by Sarga Chair before you would be complete without the unfunded mandate reference. This remains, a significant problem faced by local government. Can be minimized if parties involved properly adhere to legislation around the assignment of functions. Now, I think it's important to make the point that many of these are historic functions, so they even predate post-democracy local government. So if you look at the key ones, ambulance services, library services, licensing services, these are historic arrangements that came with the previous dispensation. Now, the point often is that there ought to be a service level agreement between the provincial department whose function it is and the municipality discharging. We know that there's no SLAs. Secondly, even if there were SLAs, the standard at which services ought to be provided is not, in many instances, defined by national sets of norms and standards. So what this means, if I were to use the example of ambulance services, for instance, the province says, for your municipality, we will provide for 13 municipalities. But that municipality is providing 20. So the municipality says, we are underfunded. The province says, no, you are underfunded. You are providing a service over and above what we are paying for. And then the question, of course, is that if the municipality reduces the 20 ambulances to 13, there's an implication on a community who must receive that service. So it's important that there's this dialogue, a discussion that seeks to answer the question, what are the services in which we will provide that gets captured into a service level agreement, and then it can obviously be properly managed. Up to now, those things are not there, the service level agreements are not there, and there's to inferring about what is the extent of the underfunded mandates. And that's the point we're making, the requirement to develop the minimum norms and standards. Provincial assignments ought to be done through formal agreements, as indicated, and the lack of agreements not only creates the problem of how it gets funded, but also, in fact, contradicts the constitution and concomitant legislation. The MECs for Finance and Municipal Councils must monitor the implementation of the formal agreements, preferably through service level agreements between the province and municipalities through provincial and municipal budget benchmarking exercise. And then finally, the MECs for Finance should ensure the assigned functions are appropriately budgeted for and allocations presented and transfers actually materialized as required by the MFMA and the Division of Revenue Act. And then towards the closure, the municipal boundary determination. A number of municipalities in KZN and Gauteng will be realigned and or merged heading into 2016. The merger preparation process will have to start during 2014. I think the point is that in almost all of these, the merit for the merger is without question. There's no question about whether this is necessary or not. It's quite clear that those municipalities, the smaller ones, will not be sustainable the way they're configured currently. The point, however, is that when you merge municipality A, which is struggling low tax base, with municipality B, which has a more sustainable tax base, is it correct that the obligation to service the residents of municipality B must be borne? When I come from Swan, I've got bigger problems. I mean, the merger cost the city 1.5 billion rand, so to put it into context. Now, the question simply is whether that burden must fit with the receiving municipality or the bigger, the northern municipality, or whether that's a problem, a financial problem that must be addressed through the national fiscal. And the point that we're making really here is that learning from the experiences of the first round and second round of municipal redetermination, we have to start the process of the due diligence now, so that by the time we get to 2016, we've identified what the issues are, we've costed those issues, and we've clearly answered the question about what funding must be provided through the national fiscus to properly address emerging costs. And then to conclude, the municipal revenues as a result of the broader economic issues will remain under pressure during 2014 and 2015. Continued great involvement of organized local government in the budget process is acknowledged and welcomed. And SALGA, for its part, will continue to increase its efforts to participate and participate meaningfully in these processes. And we have been doing so as it relates to the review of the local government fiscal framework, including the review of the infrastructure grant, infrastructure grant review, review of the own municipalities' own resources, and then of course the work that we're doing around the cost of basic services. Chairperson, thank you very much for this presentation.
That's very interesting. With a limited time, honourable members, it's 1 o'clock. You want us to quickly, want to further engage with this presentation, honourable staff?
Yes, I'll be very quick. I just want to say that I don't necessarily agree with your measures and the reasons for them, but that's another argument, okay, especially Midval. But the question I want to ask you is on slide 11. We refer to the planning tribunals, and you said the MPT will consist of experienced personnel, which will be appointed, so I take it they will be permanent employees of the municipality. But what happens in the case where there is an appeal? The appeal tribunal, will they be temporary people appointed only when there is an appeal, or will they also be permanent employees of the municipality?
Let me ask this question. I should be intimidated. You know, I always refuse intimidation, so I will ask my question. Now, Chair, let me ask this question from SALGA, because I think perhaps as a committee, perhaps we need to consider making a recommendation on that. We hear this all the time. Year after year, this issue about the mandate issue, service delivery versus unfunded mandate, then there is whole lot of the discussion and disagreement, etc., etc. Now, I want to ask this question. Maybe the other spheres can also respond, and they are represented by National Treasury. Does the IGR work? Now I'm asking, does the intergovernmental relations framework work insofar as critical issues of this is concerned? I'm asking that question. It is law, it is regulated that all spheres of government at a particular agreed interval, all the municipalities as well as the premiers get together around critical issues such as service delivery, these aspects. Now, surely if that system, if things is not working, think cascades to this level, but we can do little about them. When that integrated planning where things, where both senior leadership of government gets together to deal with these issues. So I'm asking that question, is it working in the view of South?
Because they should go, they go to that particular forum to have a serious engagement, not a coffee drinking or biscuits around and a nice, good atmosphere, feel good, get into the car and go back home. It's actually a serious discussion. For me, as I'm somebody looking in, it looks like it's not working. Something is going wrong in terms of that. And the respect of it, make sure that it actually happens. Because that's where the cake is cut, is where the money is and the program is agreed in terms of 3 spheres of government. And this goes up as well to province and national. So maybe somebody, this is for me, I think this is the crux of the problem. Can we speak frankly about it, whether it works? Because we need to make a recommendation. It is not simply there for cosmetic aspect. There's a reason why it's been put in place for that to happen. So what is going wrong with that, with respect to that? That's the first, which I think is a, for me, a fundamental question. The second one is lesser than the other one. There is a point made in the slide, I'm trying to get to it. I don't know what it means, on slide 6. It's when you deal with the combining of the increases, that second part, the combining with the recent substantial increase. What does that mean? If you could just explain what does this mean, what does this mean? Maybe in a simple, just talk to it. Make me understand what does that paragraph mean. Because it talks about issue about the meeting of the service delivery issues. What does that mean in terms of us dealing with the money? The third one, question for me for Salva, I thought they would talk to it, is the issue that is raised by FSC with respect to capacity, certain municipality capacity to be able to deal with a direct grant, which resulted to pull up. I was tempted to ask Mr. Kumal, which are these municipalities? There's a grant that is available, and if you understand, you know that that is going to happen, what is the program to deal with that? So perhaps Salga is appropriate to answer that particular question. It is somewhere in the slides of, I think it's on page 9 of the fiscal framework that FSC's line. That I just want to understand from Salga, which are these and what is it that is being done? That which is being suggested as a program to build the capacity in terms of the very act I referred to earlier on, does it receive sufficient support? And I'm talking the resource aspect for that to be able to be done. So I think for me, I want to pose, there are a number of other questions which I think they are small. Yeah, I will leave them, but ask those three questions because it's already 1 o'clock. I consider them to be very serious. I think, Chair, in terms of the Salga, if we can...
I would like you to raise those questions. What we will do with your permission is just to ask the team there to respond to those critical questions. And with others, we get the responses in writing. Please raise.
Let me just say, the one I asked during the Friday presentation, and earlier on there was, you also asked that question about the 10-year plan. That is now what is called integrated cities.
or what is that is going to require that municipality put to council with the report in a particular way, how this. I just wanted to understand from SARGA in terms of the particularly the metros. What work is being done today in the capacity, on committed capacity to address that particular issue? Because I know that Friday they didn't answer that question, there was a quick. I want to understand because there will be a requirement in terms of the procedure that is now put in place. Is the capacity already existing to be able to do that? Including the planning capacity of integration of cities. I mean, I'm South African. If I go to Kimberley and we look at the development that is taking place, far away from the city, there's patches of land in between the city, but for development of new houses, new settlement, it is going far away from the cities. Now I ask, is there a problem with the structural planning of the cities? What is the constraint measures for this continuation of running away developments? So I'm asking this question in order to understand that is the planning that is already taking place for that to address that particular aspect. In fact, if you look at the expenditure patterns of transport costs, the working class no longer pay what is normally understood to be 10%, of less than 10% of their income. They pay more than 20% already. The runaway costs, others are paying 35%, up to 40% as a result of this. Now, it's well and good when you write it. That's why I was asking the other day, is this just a word? Or is there a word that has been put into it for us to realize this particular aspect? Which means capacity, which is the National Treasury, unfortunately, is in the middle of that, to make sure that it actually, in terms of capacity, it supports that capacity, not only require ready, but to see that it actually happens in terms of making sure that hands-on kind of support that is required. So, Chair, the number of questions, but they are all capacity-related. I mean, if you look at this on page 4, the indirect land around the electrification, there's also an issue about capacity. Whether is there anything seriously being done to address the lack of capacity at the local sphere of government in order for it to be able to provide that particular service, to perform that function on an ongoing basis. My sense here in terms of it, it's not quite supported in earnest. It's an easy way out in terms of dealing with it. And that is, and today we see lots and lots of protests that the service delivery is directed or tailor-made for that. So let me leave it there, and I'll leave it. My colleague will take the rest.
Who is
the
No, I just have one, and I think it's very short. I'm actually want to focus my question on page 4, on the last bullet, where it speaks about the failure of municipalities to implement certain projects, project funds, and therefore, I'm actually want to raise a question that says, when and actually has been underspending for two consecutive financial years, but it is still entitled to receive the grants. For example, I just want to relate my question to the scenario whereby municipality received the MIG grant on 2012-13, which is 109 million, but only spent 44, which therefore is 41%, if I'm not mistaken. They applied for the rollover. On the following financial year, they also received the new grant of which was 25, which was 151 million. But currently they're sitting on 17%. So they're continuously underspending and are also continuously receiving. Now, why I relate that to this bullet is because I'm seeing that they've been failing to implement certain projects, and in this scenario I'm giving, they are failing to provide water and sanitation because they have the mandate as well of providing water. But they are failing in that mandate. They are continuously receiving this grant, this money, and there is no intervention at this point in time whereby it says who intervenes to ensure that at least the responsibility is being adhered to. And therefore, why I relate it to this is because you're saying here it may be converted to the indirect grant for the national government for any intervention. But then this scenario tells me that this may be is also saying there is seemingly there is no solution to be able to intervene and help those particular municipalities. Because there are projects that are not being, you know, taken care of, but monies are coming in. I'm not sure whether it is also leading us to a question of incapacity. I'm not sure, but the look of things, because you just see that it's also related in one particular grant. It's focused in one section of the infrastructure and building within the municipality. I think this is just what I want to be clear upon, because there are consequences. People down there are not getting the services, but there is money. Yeah,
well, I guess that you will respond, or you can respond, but some of the questions are really based. I think there are more questions on this indirect grant. But I want to help my friends from National Trust. You said you're not alone. You've got a team there behind. Can you quickly respond?
Thank you, Chair. Just on the specialist.
Sorry,
I'm Laurette Tredou. I'm responsible for governance and intergovernmental relations at SOGA. Just on the Spatial Planning and Land Use Management Act, on the question of the appeal tribunals, these tribunals will be constituted and they will be the tribunal for a period of 5 years, but they will only sit as and when an appeal arises. And what we are trying to convince SOGA is at least for local municipalities and districts only to establish a district appeal body currently, so that you don't have this in each and every municipality based on the capacity needs. But of course a metro that has quite a number of appeals might have their own appeal body, or they might also have a shared service. So we're just working on the modalities to see how we can facilitate that. But these are outside experts appointed, so they will have everything started as and where they sit. Other than the planning tribunal that will have permanent staff members and then also outside experts that will have to be paid. But with regard to the planning tribunal, we need planning experts to be employed full-time by the municipality. And then if my councillor will allow me to just highlight a bit on the question of the IGRs. You know, when the local government turnaround strategy was adopted in 2009, as local government, we were very excited because we thought that every lucid dream of integrated planning will now be realized, and that was one of the purposes of the local government turnaround strategy. It actually said it will change the way that provincial and national departments interact with municipality when IDPs are being developed. Sad to say, 5 years later, the dream still remains very much an elusive dream. And if you listen to the Minister of Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs, he shares a view with SAGA that planning should start at local government level, that national and provincial sector departments should be involved in the IDP in the municipality. Because very often you hear that there are schools built with now water and sewer systems, that there's housing development without electricity, and the reason is not because the municipality is useless. The municipality has its IDP, it plans where it's going to take the water and the electricity. These sector departments that want to build schools and do housing developments do not participate in the IDP process, and therefore the municipality do not know that there will be a need arising in over the 3-year budget period to actually provide the services in that direction. So SOGA is very passionate about the fact that we need to get that right, and that we need to get that integrated planning level, but a bottom-up approach, if you can call it that, and not a top-down approach. I think that's from the governance and IGR aspect, and then I think my colleague from infrastructure can address the rest of the questions.
I just want to say to you that if district municipalities are required to do this, you know, 67% of their expenses are going towards salaries and the mayors and the councillors, you know, that's a fact. And the problem is if they lose an appeal on behalf of a municipality, which municipality is going to pay? The district municipality or the municipality where the appeal has been held? And I'm telling you now, it's going to be a recipe for disaster. I know you're trying to find work for the district municipalities, because we've got nothing else to do at the moment, because we've got all the big name municipalities. So in any case, but I'm just warning that it's not going to work.
Chair, we don't have the time, but may can I just ask this question? I thought that the planning as is driven in terms of the local government, the IDP aspect, is a bottom-up. I would have thought it was a bottom-up process which end up with a premier conceding to what would have been consolidated in the municipality and sign off of all those as what need to inform the planning forward, which that therefore having been signed by the premier, it becomes a agreed policy on issues to be done and program that the local government, provincial government is part of that process. I thought that's what happened. So an explanation that I'm getting there, the response to it, it may suggest that it is not happening like that. I thought that's how it happens, that at the end of the day, there must be a sign off on all those consolidated IDP in a particular province, which has been an up bottom up process. Now, that explanation suggests something different. Am I hearing it right? Because if it's not like that, then of course there's a problem.
No, Honourable Ramatana, what I've done from my own notes is to say there is a gap. That's what I call it, that's one word. There's a gap in coordination with IDP. And I think that our report, that's what our report must reflect. You know, it's a pity that this report is so important and we're not engaging with it properly, but clearly, they are saying that there's a gap, and it should go to our report and to our recommendations if we so wish in terms of what needs to be done. But she's speaking about late minister who used to say, let local government be everybody's business, in 2009. Well, that passion, I'm not sure. Is there someone else who needs to add on the infrastructure? I want you, Natasha, to listen for now. You will come up later. Please proceed.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Alison Shangana. I'm with the Palaga delegation. I'm responsible for human settlements in the National Office. I just want to make two comments. One's a direct response to the question from Honorable Member Ramakani. Asked a question around the bullet point in the presentation that says that the combined with a substantial increase in the subsidy, we're going to see pressure on the HSCG. The point Palaga's trying to make there is that while the USCG is increasing this year substantially, the HSCG seems to be staying about the same and actually declining in real terms. But we wanted to add the extra point that development grant is declining in real terms this year. But in addition to that, you're seeing an added pressure, which is that the subsidy, which has been approved by MINVEC, has been increased at the end of last year, nearly doubled or tripled from the previous previous subsidy. I believe it's now over 100,000 compared to about 40,000. You'll have to ask the department for the specific numbers. But you can then, of course, see that with the USCG, HSCG in real terms declining and the cost per house, the subsidy amount per house, increasing, you're going to see fewer houses being delivered. In short, it's straight mathematics. The other point just to make around the IDP, I think the other thing that we're watching as SALGA.
I mean, that answer, I'm not sure if it is full, until you raise it about the balance between your USCG and HSCG. But you're not saying how is it supposed to be. By implication, we hear what you're saying by implication. But we want to hear from the horse's mouth. Because what confuses me, I mean, maybe other members are hearing, there was a meeting, MINVEC meeting last year, decided to double or triple. What was doubled? But is it the human HSPG that was doubled? But in implementation was not actually implemented, is it what you're saying?
What has been doubled is the cost of subsidy.
The cost.
Yes. So whereas, for argument's sake, because we don't have the figures, whereas previously we were providing 30,000 rands for each house top structure built, that quantum has now increased to 60. So the cost of providing top structure, the subsidy amount.
And USDC does that.
No, the Department of Housing. Okay. Yeah. So the quantum of subsidy is doubled, but the funding available to provide top structures remains static. So you have to spend more with the same ceiling, which means you will achieve less houses, extra units built, because each house is now costing you double the amount that it ordinarily would have been costing you to build the house.
How is that possible? I mean, the integrated plan and the issue about subsidy, there is a consequential on any of those things that we're speaking about. How is it possible that you try and do something which you think it is going to be positive, but actually you're going backwards?
I think this finds a fundamental problem, you know, that we are faced with regards to our housing policy problem. Because what it says is that the cost of delivering a house is increasing. And in fact, what in terms of the studies that we are doing now, what is actually emerging is why the subsidy amount was 92. When you determine how much subsidy is going to buy the whole grant, you say you will subsidize the households by 92,000. But the actual amount that has been paid, when you look at the amount, is actually almost like 200,000. So when you look at a lot of these municipalities, particularly in the big cities where you find that land is more expensive, they are actually paying much more per house than what the grant actually supports. So what it means is the department now has to adjust a bit, and I don't know, maybe it has adjusted to around 140,000 probably. And it is still below what actually on average is being paid for a house. You know, so what it says is that if municipalities also continue to fund that unfunded mandate, they are going to be bankrupt. And they are continuously going to go further away where land is actually expensive. That is driven by the housing program, because they are trying to get more houses. So the only way can get more houses is to go further away. The cost of that on the subsidy, access to jobs, you know, access to services for municipalities is huge. So I think for me, it just points to the fundamental problem. And I think that is where I don't think we should be saying UNCG growth is the problem. Because the point that you are raising to say, who drives planning? You know, how come municipalities can allow this sprawl? Because what you find is that the poor people are sprawling this way, the rich, the business, the commercial are sprawling the other way. These things are not coming together. So the UNCG is saying, let's begin to drive the planning now, so that the municipality can signal where this integration would happen, where you are bringing the poor and the commercial business. So you are using your regulatory instruments plus the infrastructure that you provide to begin to direct where development needs to happen. And what it means also is that you are able then to accelerate in terms of upgrading, even in terms of your backyard dwellers and your informal settlement. At least give people a site, give people services, you know, that they can start doing their own houses. So I think it is good that it is actually growing faster, because I think that is the only way that we can reach out faster to people, rather than to get to say you can build a house for a person, and out of every, how many do you build, out of how many people that you need. So I think it is also the most important.
Can I make a ruling from this side? I'm under pressure. The ruling that I want to make is to make a request to you, Comrade Gray, with your team, whoever is responsible, Mr. Shanana. Yeah. On Friday, we're seeing H's human settlement. Let's just suspend this, what you call the housing, until Friday, where we can have a proper, what you call it, discussion around it, and much, much clearer, so that even human settlement can assist us with the responses. Here, I think I see a lot of nodding. So we are agreeing with that.
How about
you there? No, that's why we are requesting them to be there on Friday.
I will be here on Friday.
Sorry?
I will be here on Friday.
Yes, but we're requesting another delay, or if not here, can get it with someone. Mm-hmm. Okay. The other question that is important I wanted to address is which was raised. But the other questions I would like you, honorably, to respond in writing. But, and Natal Treasurer, I thought in your first answer, you would say, in terms of this indirect FSC was saying the issue of indirect grants, and now you come with a disclaimer, and Salga is also raising the same thing. But what my attention has been brought to Honorable Matala, which I thought that is what it is what the
not absolutely sure should have said, is to say, in terms of the conditions of this indirect grant, it is yes, in the division of revenue, that there should be SLAs, actually. And those SLAs must stipulate the capacity building and what how it is done. Now, we looked at only to your MWIC and the RIC, but to us it is a principle across. I want your attention. To us it is a principle across for indirect and the water cost. And that is the issue that is being raised, is that there should be those SLAs, there should be reports in terms of what has been happening in terms of building this capacity. But the issue is that could arise, is this now in implementing? And perhaps that is the question that needs to be addressed. You see, Honorable Ramachagan raises an important question, but not actually, please, Honorable Ramachagan, this question must still come there. Your question is very fundamental. It's saying, is IGFR working? I think that we must come back to this one, because we are here this week. We must come back to this question. Must not just be in writing. I think we must come back and engage on this question of what is happening. Because I don't think that we should say that if there's a failure on one, two. I think the examples that were made, the good examples about provincial responsibilities being implemented at local level. I know some of the municipalities, like Johannesburg, for instance. I'm not sure about Tswane. But when the province says would want to, maybe not necessarily Johannesburg, but I suspect, when the province says would want to take responsibility for a library, the municipality says, don't worry, who will want to call a running, give us your subsidies and whatever. But I think, I don't want us to exhaust this. I want us, Honorable Matana, to come back to this question. So that we should come with solutions that if we make the commitments that are being made, but they are not what we call implemented from, what should do? Because now it seems the problem, executive. They come, they make decisions, and the municipalities, they don't work. There's no role on our Ramatana for Parliament in this. Whether it's NCOP, there doesn't seem to be a role. And I think that is where the problem is. They do these things themselves, and sometimes they don't work, and there's no way to run. But I think, thank you for raising this question. I'm sure we will continue. Let's respond it, not tomorrow, but on Friday when Sala will be here about this question that Honorable Ramachagan raised. So it's not one of the questions that needs to be responded in writing. We want to engage on this one. It's an open day. COPTA is here Friday.
Oh, okay.
COPTA is here. Well, on this note, thank you very much, and my apologies for taking this time. I was thinking that maybe we both, all of us,